I want you to just picture a scene for a second. It's maybe 2 a.m.
Okay.
It's a totally generic city street. I mean, maybe it's your street or maybe it's 1,000 miles away.
Right.
The streetlights are flickering a bit, casting those long, nervous shadows. And there's a police encounter in progress.
High stakes.
Very high stakes. Voices are raised, commands are being shouted, and the adrenaline is just spiking through the roof.
It's that moment where everything is incredibly fragile.
Exactly. It's that chaotic moment where order is just about to break
A
down,
tipping point.
the tipping point, and then in a split second, force is used.
Right.
Maybe it's a tackle to the pavement, maybe it's a baton strike, or maybe it's a gunshot.
Yeah.
It's the critical split second where legal liability, a human life, and public trust all just hang in the balance.
And you know, in 2026, we have a very specific expectation for that exact moment.
We do.
We expect that there's an objective, unblinking digital witness right there. We expect the body-worn camera to capture exactly what happened, frame by frame.
Right. We all think, okay, the camera is on, so the truth is safe.
Okay.
But now I want you to fast forward, go maybe 6 months into the future.
Okay.
You're sitting in a courtroom. The plaintiff is sitting at one table, the officers are at the other.
Tense room.
Very. The jury is leaning forward in the box. Everyone is just waiting for the moment where the lawyer presses play.
They want to see the truth.
Right. They're waiting for the objective truth.
But then comes the twist.
Exactly. The video plays, but it starts 10 seconds after the tackle actually happened.
Yeah.
Or the audio is just silent for the first minute. Or honestly, in the absolute worst case scenario, the lawyer for the department stands up and says, well, we don't have a file for that specific
It's
interaction.
just gone.
It's
The
missing.
missing minute.
The missing minute. And suddenly that courtroom feels very, very different.
It does.
Because that missing minute isn't just a technical glitch, it creates a complete vacuum.
A credibility vacuum.
Vacuum.
And I think that's the exact term we need to start with today.
Let's get into it.
Because in a courtroom, or really even in the court of public opinion, when there is a gap in the record, human nature takes over.
Right. We hate gaps.
We abhor a vacuum. We have to fill that silence with something. And historically, when there's no video to prove otherwise, juries and judges fill that gap with assumptions.
And those assumptions usually lean one way.
They almost always favor the institution.
They assume the officer acted correctly and that the missing part would have totally proven it.
Exactly. It reverts right back to a he said, she said dynamic. But one side has the weight of the badge, and the other side has literally nothing.
And this scenario, this nightmare of the missing minute, brings us to the absolute core of what we're doing a deep dive into today.
It really is the core issue.
Because we used to think the battle for transparency was won when we just bought the cameras.
Right. Check the box.
Yeah, we thought, okay, the hardware is on the chest, we're done here.
The whole picture didn't happen mentality.
Right. But today's deep dive suggests that was actually just the prologue. The real battle hasn't even been fought yet.
We're discovering that the battle for transparency is really no longer about having cameras. It's about the evidence pipeline that manages what those cameras actually produce.
The pipeline.
Yes. It's about proving the record itself.
Proving the record. And that is actually the title of the lead article we are unpacking today.
It's a great piece.
It's by Eric Sanders, Esquire, dated February 21, 2026. But we aren't just looking at one article today.
No, we have a whole stack.
We have a massive stack of documents today that frankly terrified me a little bit when I first read through them.
It's a very heavy stack.
We have a massive, and I mean massive, audit from the NYC Comptroller.
The data in that is wild.
We have a federal monitor report from just a few days ago, and we have a 2025 academic study by Kim on policy design.
This is a real convergence of evidence here.
It is.
You have the lawyer, Sanders, arguing the theory.
Right.
You have the auditor, the controller, finding the raw data.
Right.
You have the overseer, the monitor, diagnosing the culture. And then the academic, Kim, explaining the mechanism behind it all. They're all pointing to the exact same thing.
And Sanders kicks this off with a thesis statement that I just want to read because it really frames everything we're going to talk about for this entire deep dive.
Go for it.
He writes, "Cameras didn't end disputes, they moved disputes into the evidence pipeline."
That is just such a profound shift in perspective.
It really changes how you look at it.
Because we tend to think of the video as a window. You look through the window, you see reality.
Right, it's just a view of what happened.
But Sanders is arguing, no, it's not a window at all. It's a product.
The product.
It comes off a factory line, it moves through a pipeline, and at every single stage of that pipeline, the capture, the storage, review, redaction, release, things happen to the evidence.
It's being touched.
Exactly.
And if you can't see inside that pipeline, you really can't trust the product at the end of it.
Precisely.
So to even understand this pipeline, we have to define a term that is going to be the absolute star of today's deep dive.
The star of the show.
And it's a term that usually makes people's eyes just glaze right over.
The audit trail.
The audit trail. Now, be honest with me. When I say audit trail, most people just think of tax season.
Oh,
they think of, I don't know, faded receipts in a shoebox.
It sounds incredibly boring. It sounds like administrative homework that nobody wants to do.
But in this context, what are we actually talking about when we say audit trail?
We are talking about the difference between a movie and a crime scene.
Okay, I like that. Explain.
The video file, the actual MP4 that you watch on YouTube or on the news, that is the content. That's the movie.
Right.
But the audit trail is the biography of that content.
The biography.
Yes. It is a separate, immutable digital record that logs every single thing that has ever happened to that file from the moment of creation.
Give us the specifics. Like, what is actually in that log?
It logs the exact millisecond the record button was pressed. It logs the model number of the camera itself. But then it goes so much deeper.
How deep?
It logs the upload time. It logs the chain of custody. Who logged into the system and watched it?
So it tracks the people.
Exactly. Did Sergeant Jones watch it on Tuesday at 4 p.m.? Did he tag it as criminal evidence? Did he add a written note to it?
Wow.
Did someone else export a copy? Did someone delete a segment?
So it's literally the digital footprints of everyone who ever touched the evidence.
That's it. It consists of logs, trackers, access histories, handling notes, and metadata.
Okay.
It is the absolute proof that the video you're seeing is the video that was recorded, and proof that it hasn't been messed with, and that the people who were supposed to review it actually did review it.
So the say what here feels massive.
Oh, it is the whole ballgame.
Yeah.
In modern litigation, credibility entirely rests on whether the institution can prove how the evidence was handled.
Right.
It is the difference between an institution just saying, trust us, this is all we have, and saying, here is the chain of custody that proves mathematically and forensically that this is the complete record.
That distinction between trust us and here is the chain is what we are really going to explore today.
Because the trust us model is failing.
Yeah. When you look at the data we have from the NYC Comptroller audit, the trust us model isn't just cracking, it's completely shattering.
Shattering is definitely the right word for it. This audit is a reality check that hits like a freight train.
Let's dive right into these numbers.
Yeah.
Because this is really the reality check segment of our deep dive.
Let's do it.
The controller looked at a specific data set of incidents where police were present and cameras absolutely should have been rolling.
Right. Mandatory recording situations.
They wanted to see if the system was actually working as advertised.
And what they found is deeply disturbing.
Let's start with the headline number, the missingness rate.
Okay.
The audit found that footage was not on file for 36% of the incidents in the audited data set.
Let's just pause and let that number sit with you for a second. 36%.
That is more than 1 in 3.
That's huge. If I'm a member of the public and I see a police car pull up and I see the officer has a camera right there on their chest, I naturally assume there's a record of what happens next.
That is the standard assumption we all make.
But this finding says that assumption is literally wrong 1/3 of the time.
It effectively means you have a 1 in 3 chance of the objective witness just calling in sick that day.
And think about the implications for that courtroom scenario we started with.
Right, the missing minute.
If 36% of the time there is no footage, that means 36% of the time we are right back to the he said, she said dynamic of the pre-camera era.
Like the cameras aren't even there.
The technology has effectively failed for 1/3 of the cases.
But it actually gets more nuanced than that. And I think this next stat is honestly more insidious than the missing footage. Because when the footage was on file, when they actually had a video to show the audit, found that late activation or early deactivation occurred 18% of the time.
Nearly 1 in 5 videos.
So 20% of the videos that do exist are incomplete. They're chopped.
And we really have to talk about why late activation matters so much.
Yeah, because it sounds like a minor infraction, right? Oh, he missed the first 10 seconds. Who cares?
But those 10 seconds are absolutely everything.
Why?
They are the pre-force window.
The pre-force window.
Right. If I turn on my camera after the fight has already started, the camera only captures the resistance.
It captures the reaction?
Exactly. It captures you shouting or struggling or fighting back. It does not capture what I did to make you fight back.
Wow.
It doesn't capture the initial approach. It doesn't capture the tone of voice I used. It doesn't capture if I escalated things.
It totally strips away the context.
Exactly. It turns the video into a highlight reel of the suspect's bad behavior rather than a documentary of the entire interaction.
That's a great way to put it, a highlight reel.
And if you miss the lead up, you often miss the legal justification or the lack thereof for the force that followed.
So 36% missing entirely, 18% incomplete. That means nearly half the time, statistically speaking, in this data set, the record is fundamentally flawed.
And this just destroys the idea of video as self-authenticating truth.
Right.
We often treat video as this magic window. We look through it and say, ah, that is exactly what happened.
Seeing is believing.
But if the window is shuttered 36% of the time, or if the curtains are drawn for the first critical moments 18% of the time, the window is broken.
You aren't seeing reality.
No, you're seeing a curated selection of reality.
A curated selection. I mean, that's a very polite way of saying edited.
Well, it's editing by omission.
Right.
And that is why the why matters here so much. Mm-hmm. Why are these numbers so incredibly high? Is the technology just bad? Are the batteries constantly dying?
Well, the audit actually digs into this, and it points to massive systemic oversight gaps.
Let's hear it.
It identifies something called self-inspection reports.
Right. This is the internal check mechanism.
Basically, supervisors are supposed to spot check their officers. They're supposed to log in, pick a few videos at random, and say, did Officer Smith record this correctly?
It's a basic quality control measure. Trust, but verify.
Well, in this case, it's mostly just trust.
Yeah.
Because the audit found that these self-inspection reports were completely missing for 53% of the sampled months.
More than half the time.
So more than half the time, the system literally isn't watching itself.
Incredible.
The supervisors who are supposed to be the absolute first line of defense against these missing videos simply aren't doing the checks.
Or if they are doing them, they aren't documenting them.
Which, in the world of auditing, is the exact same thing.
If it isn't written down, it didn't happen.
Exactly. And Sanders makes a really crucial point in his article about this specific data.
What does he say?
He notes that the department told the auditors, get this, they said they couldn't really do trend analysis on Lee activations because it required watching the whole video, and they just couldn't scale that.
Oh, boy. Dude, it's too hard defense.
Yeah. And the controller called that claim dubious.
Dubious is auditor speak for we absolutely do not believe you.
Right.
And they shouldn't, because if you aren't aggregating this data, if you aren't looking for broad patterns, then every single failure just looks like an isolated incident.
It looks like a one-off.
Oh, Officer Smith just forgot this one time. It was a stressful situation.
But what happens if you actually pull the data?
If you pull the data, you might see that Officer Smith forgets to turn on his camera every single time he uses force.
Wow.
That is not a mistake. That is a pattern. That is a modus operandi.
But without the audit trail.
But without the audit trail and the trend analysis, you can never see the pattern. You just see a series of oops moments.
And speaking of patterns, we really have to talk about the transparency aspect.
Yeah.
The public-facing side of this pipeline.
The FOIL data.
Yes. The audit looked at FOIL data. Freedom of Information Law requests.
This is critical.
This is how journalists, lawyers, and just regular everyday citizens get access to these records. It is literally the mechanism of democracy.
And the numbers here are just, they're frustrating.
Frustrating is putting it so mildly.
Give us the stats.
The average delay to either grant or deny a request was 133 business days.
That is 6 months.
6 months, just to get a yes or no answer.
Unbelievable.
And that's the average. The longest delay in the dataset was over 4 years, 1,076 days.
Just think about the human impact of that.
It's devastating.
Something happens to you, maybe you were mistreated, you file a complaint, you ask for the video to prove it.
And the system says.
The system said, okay, wait here,
yeah.
And you wait, and you wait. Seasons change. Years pass.
4 years.
By the time you get the video, 4 years later, the witnesses have moved away. Your own memory has faded. The officer might have retired.
The narrative has completely set, like, concrete.
It denies justice by delaying it.
Absolutely. But here is the kicker. This is the stat that I think really reveals the whole game.
Hit me.
The audit found that when people appealed, when they refused to take no or wait for an answer, 97% of those appeals were granted.
97%.
Yeah.
That is almost a statistical impossibility.
It is stunning.
Think about what that practically means. It means that almost every single time the department said no or delayed the release, they were legally wrong.
Right.
When a higher authority actually looked at it, they said, actually, yes, you can have this.
So what does that actually tell us about the initial refusal?
It tells us that the system is inherently designed to gatekeep.
Yeah.
It tells us that transparency is conditional. The system says no or wait until you apply enough pressure.
It's not a right. It's a negotiation.
A negotiation where one side has literally all the cards and all the time in the world.
Unless you have a lawyer or the time or just the stubbornness to fight for 4 years, you just never get the truth.
You accept the no and you walk away.
That is a deeply chilling thought. If you don't have the resources to appeal, the truth just stays buried in the pipeline forever.
Which brings us right back to the courtroom.
Right.
If transparency is conditional for the general public, what is it for the litigant? What happens when you are actively fighting for your freedom or your reputation?
And this leads us perfectly to the next source in our stack today, the Federal Monitor Report.
This is a crucial piece of the puzzle.
Because this gives us the governance problem. We've seen the stats, the missing videos, the massive delays. Now we need to understand the culture that allows that to even happen.
The Monitor's report uses very specific, very careful bureaucratic language. But if you read between the lines, it is scathing. It describes an ongoing lack of meaningful accountability.
And there's a specific distinction they make in the report that I found really interesting. It's the difference between training and discipline.
Yes. This is a critical insight into how bureaucracies handle their own failures. Often, when these failures happen, a camera isn't turned on or it's turned off early.
Right.
The institutional response is training.
Right.
We will retrain the officer. We will have a coaching moment.
Which sounds nice, right? It sounds constructive. Like, hey, you made a mistake. Let's learn from it and do better.
It does sound nice. But the Monitor report states explicitly that relying solely on training without discipline has proven completely ineffective.
Ineffective? Why is it ineffective?
Because the officers already know how to use the cameras.
Right.
It's not a complex piece of machinery. You press a big button right in the middle of your chest.
Mm-hmm.
The failure isn't a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of will.
It's a behavioral choice.
Exactly. Think about it in terms of getting speeding tickets.
Okay.
If I speed on the highway every single day, and every time I get caught, the officer just pulls me over and says, hey, remember, driving fast is dangerous, but never actually gives me a ticket.
Am I going to stop speeding?
Probably not.
No. You're going to keep doing it until it actually costs you something.
Exactly. That is the cultural layer we're talking about. If there are no consequences for turning a camera on late, it just becomes a habit.
The tolerated habit.
As Sanders puts it in his article, failures do not self-correct. They repeat.
They repeat.
If the system ignores the failure, it normalizes the failure. The coaching moment literally becomes a permission structure.
And this connects right back to the audit trail, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Because the only way to know if the system is actually applying discipline is to see the logs.
Precisely. We need to see the consequence proof.
Did the failure trigger an escalation?
Right. Did it go to a command level review? Did the officer lose vacation days? Or did it just vanish into a coaching folder somewhere?
Without the audit trail, we simply don't know if accountability is actually happening. We just have to take their word for it.
And based on the stats we just went over, their word isn't good enough.
Not nearly good enough. So we have the stats showing the massive holes in the record. Mm-hmm. We have the monitor showing the total lack of discipline filling those holes.
Right.
Now let's widen the lens a bit, because we have this study by Kim from 2025, and this takes a national view on policy design.
This study is important because it moves us away from just talking about one city and looks at the structural rules of the game across the board.
It introduces this concept of heterogeneity in policy.
Yes, heterogeneity.
Okay, unpack that for us. What does that mean in this context?
It's a fancy academic way of saying variability or inconsistency. It basically means it's a mess out there.
A patchwork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Every department has completely different rules. But the study found a major hinge point.
Which is?
The effectiveness of cameras depends almost entirely on the activation rules.
So not all camera policies are created equal.
Far from it. The study found that strictly defined rules, meaning you must record in these specific situations, absolutely no exceptions, lead to vastly better outcomes.
Better compliance, better transparency.
Right. And the alternative.
Yeah. What's the alternative?
The alternative is discretionary rules. Rules that say things like, record when you think it's appropriate, or record unless it hinders your duties.
Discretion. That's the magic word.
It is the magic word. The study suggests that when rules are discretionary, the camera stops being a transparency tool altogether.
What does it become?
It becomes a tool for narrative control.
Narrative control, that sounds incredibly manipulative.
It is the aha moment of the entire study.
Explain that.
If an officer can choose when to hit record during a volatile moment, the record itself is inherently biased.
Right.
Think about the missing minute we started this whole discussion with.
Yeah.
If I can choose to start recording after I've escalated the situation,
you can completely frame the encounter.
Exactly. I can wait until you are screaming at me. I can wait until you are physically resisting, and then I hit record.
Wow.
Now, the video shows an angry, non-compliant suspect and a calm, professional officer just trying to gain control. I have edited reality in real time.
Discretion is the enemy of the record. That's the line that really stuck with me from the reading.
It's the perfect summary. If you give someone the option to edit their own accountability, they will almost always do so to protect themselves.
It's human nature.
Exactly. It isn't even necessarily about being evil. It's about self-preservation. But it defeats the entire purpose of the camera.
The camera is supposed to override human bias, not be subject to it.
Precisely.
So we have thoroughly established the problem. The video is often missing or late. The oversight is spotty. The discipline is non-existent. And the policy allows way too much discretion.
It feels like we've dismantled the whole body cams solve everything narrative.
We really have. But we can't just leave it in pieces on the floor.
No, we have to rebuild it.
And that is exactly where Sanders' integrity artifact model comes in.
I love this part of the paper because it's so practical.
Yes. It's not just complaining about the system. It's a framework for fixing it. It reframes the demand.
Instead of asking, do you have the video? We need to start asking, prove the pipeline.
Prove the pipeline. And Sanders lays out 5 specific integrity questions.
These are questions that any lawyer, any judge, or even an informed citizen should be asking to verify the truth.
Let's walk through these one by one, because this is the real toolkit. This is how you fight back against that vacuum we talked about.
Question number one,
what should exist?
This is the existence proof.
Okay.
You don't start with the video they handed you. You start with the external data. You look at the dispatch logs, the radio calls, the 911 transcripts.
Explain how that works in practice.
Okay, so the radio dispatch says 3 units responding to a disturbance at 2nd and Main.
Right.
That means there are at least 3 officers on the scene. That means there must be at least 3 body camera videos.
So you define the universe of missing evidence before you even look at what they actually gave you.
Exactly. If the DA hands you 2 videos, you stop right there.
You don't just say thank you.
No. You cite that 36% missingness figure from the controller, and you ask, where is the third angle? Why is it missing?
You put the burden on them to explain the gap immediately.
Right. Don't let them set the baseline. You set it.
That is powerful. Question number 2. What exists?
This is the continuity proof. And this goes back to that 18% stat about late activation.
The pre-force window.
Exactly. You have to check the timestamps on the video and compare them to the timestamps on the radio log.
Matching up the clocks.
Right. Dispatch says the officer arrived on scene at exactly 2 o'clock. But the video starts at 2 o'clock and 45 seconds.
That's a 45-second gap.
That is the pre-force window.
A lot can happen in 45 seconds.
A life can end in 45 seconds. An argument can completely escalate into a physical fight in 45 seconds.
So if that window is missing.
If that window is missing, you have a continuity failure.
Mm.
You have to demand a formal explanation for that specific gap.
Question number 3. Is it complete and continuous?
This is the handling proofs. This is where we look at the internal trackers.
The trackers.
Yeah. The controller audit confirmed that the NYPD and most major departments honestly already have these internal systems.
They already exist.
Yes. They have an intranet tracker and progress notes.
Progress notes, like a medical chart.
Exactly like a medical chart. It says things like, reviewed by Sergeant Jones on this date.
Okay.
Flagged for legal review on that date. Categorized as non-disclosure, exported to district attorney.
So these notes literally tell the story of the video's life inside the bureaucracy.
They do.
Yes, sir.
If there's a gap in those notes,
what happens?
If the file sits untouched for 3 weeks and then suddenly gets reviewed the day before trial, that is highly suspicious. We need to see those exact notes.
Question number 4, who handled it and how?
This is the oversight proof.
Right.
Did a supervisor actually review it? Remember the 53% missing self-inspection logs?
That was staggering.
If the department claims we reviewed this use of force and found absolutely no wrongdoing, you ask for the log.
Show me the receipts.
Show me the login. Show me the exact timestamp where Lieutenant Smith logged in to watch this specific video.
And if they can't produce the log,
then the review didn't happen. They rubber stamped it. You have proven that their internal investigation was a sham.
And finally, question number 5. What did the system do when integrity failed?
Consequence proof.
Consequence proof.
If we find a gap or a late start, what happened internally? Did the failure trigger an escalation?
Did it go up the chain?
Or was it completely ignored? This connects back to the monitor's warning about training versus discipline.
Right.
If the log shows a failure, like a missing video, but the personnel file shows absolutely no discipline, you have proven that the system tolerates noncompliance.
You've put the department on trial, not just the officer.
Exactly.
I really like the visual analogy Sanders uses here. We shouldn't think of the pipeline as just a storage locker where you throw the tape and retrieve it later.
No, think of it as a factory line. The evidence is the raw material. It moves down the belt.
It gets handled, tagged,
packaged, inspected or not inspected, and potentially manipulated administratively before it ever reaches the public.
We need to see the production logs for that factory.
We do.
So if we adopt this model, if lawyers actually start demanding these integrity artifacts and not just the MP4 files, what changes?
It completely shifts the burden.
How so?
Right now, the burden is almost always on the plaintiff or the citizen to prove something bad happened in that gap. Prove the officer hit you first.
Which is basically impossible if there is no video.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you demand the pipeline and the institution cannot produce the logs, the burden shifts back to them.
Oh.
They have to explain why their own system failed. They have to explain why the audit trail is broken.
It turns, I don't know, into you failed to prove.
Exactly. And in a legal setting, that is everything.
So how do we fix the system so we don't have to painstakingly fight for these logs every single time?
The source material outlines 4 specific reform buckets.
Systems that don't depend on good faith.
That is the key phrase. We need systems that work even when people are actively trying to hide things, or when they're just lazy or overworked.
We move from trust to verification. Let's hit the buckets. Reform bucket number 1, mandatory integrity artifacts.
This means logs must be automatic system outputs.
Automatic.
Right now, a lot of supervisory review relies on a sergeant just remembering to fill out a form or write in a paper logbook. That's human error just waiting to happen.
Or intentional error.
Right. The reform is the system itself, the software should generate the log. Officer X viewed video Y at 10 p.m.
No human input required.
None. You can't fake an automated system log nearly as easily as you can fake a paper report. It removes the human element from the record keeping entirely.
Bucket number 2, scalable trend analysis.
This directly addresses the dubious claim the NYPD made about not being able to spot trends.
Right.
The system must aggregate data. It should be able to spit out a clear dashboard.
A dashboard?
Yes, a dashboard that says, Officer Jones has activated his camera late in 80% of his use of force incidents this entire year.
The system should just flag that automatically.
Yes.
That seems like basic data management. I mean, if my streaming service can tell me what I want to watch based on my last 10 clicks, the police department should be able to tell if an officer is habitually hitting record late.
Precisely. The data is already there. It's sitting in their servers right now. They are just actively choosing not to organize it.
The reform is to mandate that analysis, make the patterns visible.
Yes.
Bucket number 3, independent triggers and cross-checks.
This is absolutely vital.
Why?
Right now, we often rely on the officer to self-report use of force to trigger a review. Hey, boss, I used force today. Better check my video.
Which is very optimistic, relying on the honor system for high-stakes accountability.
It's a massive conflict of interest. The reform is to use cross-checks.
Cross-checks like what?
Link the camera system directly to the medical logs. If an ambulance was called to the scene, the system should automatically flag the video for a mandatory review.
Because an ambulance obviously means force or injury occurred.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Link it to dispatch codes. If the code was officer in distress or taser deployed, automatic flag. Don't wait for the officer to tell you. Let the data tell you.
That makes so much sense. It takes the discretion completely out of the review process.
It does.
And finally, bucket number 4, predictable consequences.
A strict ladder of escalation. It has to be clearly defined.
Like what?
First offense, formal warning.
What?
Second offense, loss of vacation days. Third offense, unpaid suspension. Whatever it is, it must be written down and it must be automatic.
Like a speeding camera. Flash, you get a ticket.
Exactly. If you fail to record, there must be a defined penalty. No more coaching moments or chronic, repeated failures.
The cost of hiding the truth must be higher than the cost of revealing it.
That's it.
It seems like all of these reforms really push in the exact same direction, removing the wiggle room.
Yes.
Removing the human element of administration and replacing it with hard, automated rules.
Because the human element is where the bias creeps in. The missing minute almost always happens in that human gap. The gap where someone decides not to record or decides not to review. We need to close that gap with automation and strict policy.
So bringing this all together, we started with the missing minute in the courtroom.
We did.
We looked at the audit showing 36% missing footage. We looked at the monitor report showing a culture of zero discipline.
We saw how discretion is the enemy.
And we've laid out a real way to prove the record.
It is a comprehensive shift in how we think about this.
Mm-hmm.
We are arguing that the camera is just a device. It's literally just a piece of plastic and glass.
The record system, the pipeline, is the actual accountability.
Yes.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to hit this closing argument hard. There is a line in the conclusion of Sanders' piece that sums it all up so perfectly. Legitimacy is not a given. It must be proven.
That is the ultimate takeaway. You don't get to claim legitimacy just because you bought the cameras.
You don't get credit for the hardware if the software is rigged.
Exactly. You have to prove your legitimacy every single day by maintaining the pipeline.
We have three concrete asks to leave you with today. Three things to actually do with this information, depending on who you are.
First, for the public.
What should the public do?
Stop just asking for the video. Demand the pipeline. Demand the audit trails.
Right.
When you see a news story about a controversial video, ask the hard questions. Where is the rest of it? When did it start? Who reviewed it? Don't accept the curated clip as the whole truth.
Second, for the lawyers listening, you have a huge job here.
They do.
Request integrity artifacts in discovery. Don't just lazily check the box for media files.
Ask for the logs, the trackers, the notes, the metadata.
Sanders has given you the blueprint.
Yep.
Use it to force the system to reveal itself.
And third, for the institutions themselves. You must be able to prove, with hard documentation, what happened to the evidence from the moment of capture to the moment of release.
And if you can't produce the audit trail.
If you cannot produce the audit trail, you are not offering transparency. You are offering a negotiated narrative.
A negotiated narrative. That is such a haunting thought to end on. If the institution can't show the receipts, they are really just telling a story.
And in a democracy, we deserve the receipts. We deserve the raw truth.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us into the hidden layer of evidence. It's a bit technical, it's a bit scary, but it is absolutely essential to understanding the world we actually live in.
Always a pleasure to unpack the pipeline.
Stay curious, everyone, and keep asking the hard questions. We'll see you on the next dive.